It's time to Ask the Pharmacist, where we go behind the medical headlines. Elizabeth Roddick joins us from New Life Pharmacy. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
And a long time no see.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a break.
Yeah, do I look any older?
I would say you're looking younger.
Goodness. Right, okay. Now, we're going to get on with that, so we'll leave the fiction behind and we'll get on with some of the facts. Now, there's been a few headlines actually lately suggesting that alcohol can increase the risk of cancer. Now, the first was about breast cancer in women.
Yeah, the report emphasises the risk of many types of cancer, not just breast cancer, if you drink too much alcohol. But the question is, what is too much? Now, there's an interesting table in the report showing that out of 1,000 women, 116 would get breast cancer in their lifetime with no alcohol. Then if you take up to 3 units a day, the number increases to 121, for example, another 5 cases. 3 to 6 units, then you jump to 143. And then, of course, the largest number of units taken, 6 units a day, there are 70 extra cases out of 1,000 women. Probably the worst type of drinking is binge drinking. For example, having excessive alcohol, excessive numbers of units over a short period of time. For example, a weekend.
Now, there was also, when you're talking about amounts, also a headline about just having one drink of wine or beer a day could give you skin cancer. Now, I'd never heard this one before.
Researchers, I wanted to look into this. It was researchers from the United States and Taiwan and South Africa, and they looked at research showing a link between taking alcohol and the risk of non-melanoma skin cancer. Now, that's squamous cell and basal cell carcinoma. These are much slower growing than malignant melanoma. They wanted to see if you increased the daily alcohol by 10 grams. Now, I need to explain that. If you can imagine 150ml glass of, say, a 12% wine, that contains 14 grams of alcohol. So by increasing your intake, say, by a small glass, then that increased the risk of skin cancer by 7%. Interestingly, some of the studies found no increase in risk because all the differing factors involved in the headline probably means that the headline is misleading. The message is, if you're drinking sensibly, don't be concerned. I mean, I was imagining you, Simon, sitting on the beach with your pina colada.
Just one? Well, no, maybe. So, I mean, is there actually alcohol good for anything?
Well, there's certainly been some research suggesting that drinking less than 2 drinks a day could in fact lengthen your life. One of the links tends to be looking at the Mediterranean diet. Now, having some alcohol with a meal, as well as fish, vegetables and fruit. There was also one study in the Journal of Neuropsychiatric Disease and Treatment suggesting moderate drinkers were 23% less likely to develop cognitive impairment, Alzheimer's, other forms of dementia. Dr. Nise, that's the co-author of the study, did, however, suggest we don't recommend that non-drinkers start drinking. And a third study, this time from Holland, they showed healthy adults who drank 1 or 2 glasses a day have a decreased chance of developing type 2 diabetes. So the message here is definitely, if you're going to drink alcohol, then moderation is the key.
And also in amongst all these statistics, we're all individual, aren't we? And we have genetic things as well going on. So
Yeah, I think it's an all-round thing.
Right, this is one I'm quite interested in. Kissing it better really works. saliva is found to have properties that help speed up the healing process. Now, as far as I knew, it was only cats that had that.
Yeah, you're quite right, Simon. But this was a research project from Chile. They were using skin cells grown in a laboratory and fertilised chicken eggs. They were looking at a protein found in saliva, statin-1. And whether this would slow the speed or the spread of candida. Now, that's a fungal infection. They used fertilised chicken eggs to see the growth of new blood vessels around the embryo when they tended. They introduced the protein to see what happened. They also did some experiments with saliva from donors with histatin-1 and then remade. Then what they did was they removed it in the experiment and tried again. It was found that the protein slowed the growth of the candida, the fungal infection, and the statin didn't produce more cells. But what it did was it just congregated round the damaged area. I mean, our saliva in the mouth keeps the mouth moist, but also reduces bacteria and helps heal wounds.
So could this be then a new way of healing wounds? I mean, you go to the doctor and ask them to kiss you.
Probably not, Simon. But it's a long way off because we'd have to be animal studied followed by human experiments. They need to prove that it's effective and, of course, safe. We are getting closer to understanding, though, how, say you burn your mouth or bite your tongue, there's a natural healing process that goes on. Kissing a child's knee when they fall, I think, will only have a very powerful placebo effect. And probably that's all.
I'll go for that. Now, we're moving on to another headline. Now, nearly all men over 60 and women over 75 are eligible for statins, analysis suggests. Now, statins, they're for reducing cholesterol, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right, Simon. Researchers wanted to see how many people in England would be offered a statin if GPs followed the 2014 NICE guidelines. Now, NICE is the body that suggests the NHS the best guidelines, best procedures, medicines, quality standards. And patients are presented or given statins after an event such as heart attack or stroke. And it was an international team of researchers that used information from the Health Survey for England. Now, this is a survey that's carried out on a yearly basis to look at health in a sample of adults and children. And they used the information to calculate the risk of people getting cardiovascular disease. And therefore, under the present guidelines, would they be eligible to be given a statin? The guidelines say that if you have a 10% risk of cardiovascular disease in the next 10 years, you should be offered a statin. Risk is measured by looking at your lifestyle. Now, out of nearly 3,000 people, they estimated that all men over 70 and women between 65 and 75 could be offered a statin. So by following the guidelines, 11.8 million adults between 30 and 84 years of age would be eligible. But I think you have to be cautious about interpreting data which only shows one moment in time. We don't know whether these people will go on to have heart disease. And were all the people in the study representative of all English people? So I think we have to think cautiously about that.
Who was actually behind the study?
This was the English health study for England.
Oh, well. Sometimes you sort of wonder if there's a vested interest in some of these reports. Yeah.
Okay. It was a public one.
Now, can you actually reduce your cholesterol yourself without using statins?
Yeah, stopping smoking, having more exercise, reducing alcohol consumption. At the moment, it's recommended 14 units a week for both men and women, and eating a healthy diet. I mean, the message is, if you're concerned about cholesterol and you want to talk to someone, then do go along to your doctor. There may be a risk in your family. You may have lifestyle risks, but otherwise, I wouldn't worry about it and do the proper things. As you say, you can lower your cholesterol yourself.
Right. Now, a drug used to treat diabetes could help those with Parkinson's disease. Now, what is Parkinson's disease? Obviously, it concerns the brain, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a deterioration of a part of the brain called the substantia nigra. And what it causes is a reduction in the chemical dopamine. And it causes tremor, involuntary shaking. You also get very slow movement, stiff muscles. Person sometimes has difficulty moving, and when they do move, it's almost like a shuffle.
So this is a different drug then to the one that is normally used?
Yeah, we tend to treat Parkinson's by replacing the dopamine that's lost in the brain. Now, researchers from London and Baltimore studied the drug exenatide. This is a drug that is given for type 2 diabetes. And there were 62 people in the trial, and half were given the drug and half a placebo, in other words, a sugar tablet. They used an injection form, and the participants injected themselves for 48 weeks, as well as taking their own medication. Now, after the 48-week period, they were followed up for a further 12 weeks. The main measurements were to do with motor ability, movement, such as walking. The assessment was carried out by probably taking first thing in the morning, they took measurements, and then they took their medicine, and then 1 hour after that, they again measured them. They found that those who'd taken the drug scored better and had improvement in movement and motor scores, and the placebo group had worsened. But generally, there was only a very small difference between the two groups. It was a very small study, but a short period of time. But it would have been worthwhile perhaps extending the study in the future. I think that's something we should look at. But one of the important points in all of this is, once again, using an established medicine in another area, another disease. The medicine has already been, let's say, tested extensive trials to get licensed for type 2 diabetes. So we know that it's safe and we don't have to start from scratch. But of course, we have to do the studies to see if it works in this particular area. I think we'll be hearing more and more about drugs being used for other conditions in the future. And I think that's the way forward. Let's take a drug that's used for X and let's try it for Y.
Because it's already had all the money and the research done on it, hasn't it, mostly?
I think it's important. I think the safety side is very, very important. And if that's been proved, that's a huge step to start doing other studies to see if it actually works in another disease.
And in theory, that should make it cheaper, shouldn't it, really?
It should do.
Well, we'll see. If you've got any questions for Elizabeth on anything that we've spoken about today, or if you've got any other questions that you'd like to get in touch, you can drop me a line here, or you can get in touch with Elizabeth directly through the pharmacy, can't you? It's all the
www.newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
And it's a nice, accessible website. And you also have your other health website, don't you?
Yeah, I've got two, actually, newlifehealthcare.co.uk. And I'm now trying to look at women over 50 and how we can improve our quality of life, ourqualitylifesystem.co.
There you go. Lots of stuff to listen to. You've got quite a lot of interviews there as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've started doing interviews with women who are really amazing women.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
You're saying that some women aren't amazing?
Some aren't.
Hey.
And I know, can I just say hello to two people? Is mm-hmm. that all right?
Mm-hmm.
At the very end here. And it's Mr. Kenneth McIntosh. Sorry, McTavish. I've even got the wrong name. Mr. Kenneth McTavish and Miss Anne Riley, who will be listening to this for the very first time.
Well, hello, and nice to have you along. Elizabeth will be back in a couple of weeks, won't you?
Thank you very much, yes.